Tune in to the hottest sports talk show.
I've never had it so good, sports radio.
Join us weekdays at 7 p.m. Stories about players and coaches of all levels. We make it easy to talk sports.
Never had it so good, Sports Talk Radio. It's Monday, and over the weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I had to watch a lot of NFL and some baseball if I wanted to and try to catch up and see what Serena was doing. So it was an excellent weekend. I'm here with my co-host, David Riley, and also Tim Moore. Gentlemen, how are you all doing?
Doing well, Precious.
Doing well, Precious.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Tim Moore, I got a test. I want to know, who's the head coach of the Florida football team at the University of Florida? Who's the head coach of the football team?
Isn't that Napier?
That's Napier. Now, do you know who's the head coach at West Virginia right now?
Oh, I do know. He came from East Carolina, but I can't remember his name right off the top of my head.
I'm glad
you can.
He came
there from East Carolina.
Test proven. Theory done. Duck.
Hey, look, I'm losing my homeboys. I'm one by one. Okay.
No, I'm just saying, Duck. I mean, even if they don't remember, they can't get his name right. And then, I mean, it's like, I mean, just the impact on the game of college football, Duck. That's all I'm saying. Neil Brown.
Hey, Princess.
Neil Brown.
Hey, Princess.
What?
All I know is, you know, I have Steve. Who when we go who we pick during the year, he'll pick West Virginia. He'll pick the other team, hoping that West Virginia can pull it out. I want to say on record, Steve, just pick West Virginia. Don't even worry about the other team.
Okay. Well, Duck, I can do that for you. Duck, I can pick the other team and kind of hope that West Virginia can win too. I can do that for you this year. How about that? I can pick the other team and then say, Lord, let West Virginia win just so Duck will be happy on Monday. Can I do that for you, too?
Look,
and it's just Monday. It's just Monday.
All I know is I hope them Gators do something because this is going to be a miserable Monday between the Gators and the Cowboys.
Oh, it's going to be some hard times, Duck. It's going to be some hard times. My conversation about those Cowboys is that it's just preseason. Everybody that wants it, it's just preseason. So that's my conversation with that. How about them Cowboys, Steve Thornton? Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you very much. Kay Pasa from Texas. There you go. How about them Cowboys? They're going to be all right.
That's
they're
right. Thank you. I forgot I had a partner on here. That's right.
Yeah.
How about them Cowboys? Duck and Tim, I'm going to turn it over to you. My theory is proven. We know who is at the University of Florida. We couldn't remember who was at West Virginia. Thank you.
Okay. That's it. Look, keep pouring salt on the wound. Okay. All right. Petty Princess. Okay. All right.
Petty Princess.
I think Larry might be a few minutes late because he's trying to get
okay.
a job. So right now we just have Steve. Yeah, we just have Steve right now and myself and Tim.
Yeah, that's it.
Rich.
Okay. All right, and Princess, you got to hang around till we get the crew in. I want to talk about the retirement of Serena Williams. And like I told the guys last week, looking through a Christian eye, I want to know if the Puma outfit was retired too.
What Puma outfit?
The cat outfit.
Oh. Yeah, she has to get rid of that because she's got kitties now, kittens. Yeah. She had her kitten. She had to get rid of that cat suit.
Okay, all right.
You know what, Duck? I'm hoping, you know, I don't watch a whole lot of tennis, but I've seen a few of the other players. I'm hoping the Katsuta's retired because they're not going to wear it like Serena did, regardless.
Nobody has her shape.
Right.
Naomi Osaka, Sloane Stephens,
yeah.
Coco Gauff. Nobody wants to see a Katsuta on them because that's Serena,
exactly.
For sure.
Hanging off of them, you mean to say, Princess? Hanging off. And Steve, as I was saying, I was looking through Christian eyes, so I'm just asking for a friend.
There you go. Hey, no one can wear that cat suit the way Serena could. And so we're going to retire the cat suit and see what happens in the future. That's all we can do.
Okay, what did you think about
her greatness?
What did you think about her retirement, you know? Were you surprised?
You asking me?
Yes.
Steve? Yeah, I was not. I was not surprised. And I'm actually very happy for Serena. I don't feel as though she has anything else to prove in the tennis world. And I think her husband and her little girl really, really make her happy. And that's really all I want for her, is for her to be happy. I think I was telling my wife the other day, we have truly lived through an iconic period in tennis.
Huh.
When you think about Serena and her sister Venus, and even on the men's side where you have three of the greatest tennis players that ever lived with Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic. And then Serena and Venus on the women's side, it has truly been just watching history over the last 10, 12, 15 years, 20 years with Serena. But I wasn't surprised, and I am truly, truly happy for her. And I don't think that we will see another like that for a long time. Yeah. Tennis wants, every sport loves to have a superstar, and they really like to see somebody dominate. And they're looking for that person now on the women's side. And I keep telling my wife, I said, not her. Every time they get somebody to win a major, they're like, okay, she is really good. We'll see what happens. And I'm like, she's going to get beat next tournament. And, I mean, we've had so many different winners of the majors on the women's side. It's like, you know, it's a revolving door. And again, I think it's just a testament to the true greatness of Serena and the Williams sisters in general, but specifically Serena. Because people forget that, you know, Venus has like 7 majors, I think. And I think that's probably more than anybody else that's actively playing right now. So I wasn't surprised.
Okay,
you can tell I'm a Serena fan.
Okay. Yeah. I want to jump to you, Princess, because, you know, when it started off, it was all about Venus. I mean, you know, nobody really knew a lot about the younger sister. So your thoughts?
Yeah, I remember Venus and tall and skinny with all those legs. And I remember her saying it, but I also remember the father saying, if you think she's good, wait till you see her sister.
Yep.
And I watched the other day, Serena won her first Grand Slam at the ripe old age of 17. 17, and she had braids in her hair, and she dominated at 17. And she went on to win 23 Grand Slams in the singles, but she won 14 Grand Slams in doubles. So she really changed women's tennis forever. And I'm talking about the way she dressed, the fact that she looked like me, and we did not have a lot on that side of tennis. And just listening to Naomi Osaka, you know, Sloane Stephens, and also Coco Gauff, they said they grew up, you know, being inspired by Serena and Venus. And thank you to the both of them and what they did and the impact. And as a woman at 40, I don't think she has anything to prove. She's married. She has a child now, a daughter, she's getting tennis lessons. She said she can't teach it herself. She said she didn't have the patience for it. But to see her flourish and to see her come into her own and have other interests and other things, and she just got her own building on the Nike campus. She said she remembered going to Nike, and there was a Michael Jordan building. Well, now there is a Serena Williams building on Nike's campus dedicated to her, her shoes, her clothing, and her championships.
Okay. You got that cat suit in there.
Tim, yes. I want to come to you because I'm looking at it as everybody's talking about how crazy the father was. How did you think he handled Serena and Venus?
Crazy like a fox, Doug. He was. I thought he was a little crazy myself when they first came out. I was kind of embarrassed by the brother for a minute, but over time, I realized what he was doing was taking the pressure off of the girls and allowing them to focus on tennis while he, you know, brought all the media attention on to him. He allowed them to focus on the game without having, the kind of pressure that might have been on them doing the kind of groundbreaking things that Princess just pointed out that they were doing. And so I thought he, in retrospect, handled it very well. The impact of these two sisters is tremendous, and I think Steve touched on some things that we might forget. We have lived through just a tremendous period of time. I have a daughter who's now 26 years old, and I remember how I used to call her when Serena first started winning and Venus first started winning, and tell her to watch these sisters because I was so proud to see a black woman in a sport that was not typically, controlled or led by sisters, dominating the way that they were, and it was something for young black girls to be proud of. It was something for old black men like me to be proud of because we remember the time when we didn't see very many sisters. I mean, Zena Garrison came out, but she never was dominant at the level that these two have been. And it was just inspiring what they've done. And Serena being sort of an atypical body type, too, for tennis players. You know, we were joking about the cat suit and everything, but she's a little thicker than most. And for a sister who has the kind of body type that is typical of our community, to have that kind of success in a sport where you very rarely see that was just tremendous. And I think her retirement is well deserved. At 40 years old, you don't see that kind of that time. We may never see her type again, as Steve pointed out.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. I want to stay right with you, Tim, because I want to touch upon college football, and it could be college, it could be high school, it could even be pro. Why are the athletes still getting in so much trouble? I just saw with a young man, the starting quarterback for Auburn, got in trouble for eluding the cops. So let's kind of talk about why these young men are getting in so much trouble.
You know, it's hard to say. I think all of us, having played ball, Steve played on a very successful – I think Steve played on one of the best high school football teams I've ever seen when they won the state championship. And I think it was 73 they won the state championship, 71 when they won the state championship. You played on a tremendous high school. Yeah. Okay, 70. we all played ball on some successful football teams. And we were around a lot of guys who, tremendous athletes, played against them, played with them. Some of whom got in trouble, but I think during this era of social media, cable television giving more access to information at a much earlier age than we ever had, there is much more temptation for them at an early age. There's money out there that wasn't available legally when we were coming along, and I think they feel an entitlement sometimes because of their upbringing, coming up in this era, that we did not share. I mean, our parents used to scare us, and the worst thing that a coach could say to us was that they were going to tell our parents. These kids don't care, and I think that combination of things has made it much more. I don't know, frequent or much more liable that they would do something like that.
Okay. Okay. Steve, same question. And what I want to say with that is some people are saying it's because a lot of the kids are coming from a single family home. And some of them are joining gangs. So your thoughts on that?
That's an interesting point. And what I'll do is piggyback on what Tim said. He said that there is a feeling of entitlement, with which I agree. I also think that the guys who are big-time 4- and 5-star recruits, they also have a feeling of invincibility. It's like, I come to campus, and they come in, I'm the BMOC, I'm the big man on campus. And the ones who don't have any real personal discipline,
right.
And if you come to a college campus and that coach treats you as if you are a celebrity right off the bat, you have a feeling that, hey, do what I want to do. But I'm not sure, to be perfectly honest, I'm not sure exactly where or what leads them down the road to trouble. But I think a lot of, I won't say a lot, well, yeah, some of it does have to do with the coaching and the direction that they get once they hit campus. And but I have said this in past, on past episodes of this show, is that some guys are knuckleheads. They may be truly, truly gifted athletes. They may be truly gifted athletes, and many of them are. But it is hard when you got a knucklehead to keep him on the straight and narrow. I mean, we had a coach here at Texas at one time that I thought was just outstanding. That was Charlie Strong. And he basically, to me, he locked down the knucklehead. He says, you can't do A, B, and C. You can't play here. After a couple of seasons that were subpar as far as Texas was concerned, they got rid of the brother. But what I thought he had done was he had instilled some discipline in that program. Guys knew that if they veered too far off the straight and narrow, they were going home. Straight and narrow, they were going home. And there is that fear. There's not that fear anymore. And one of the things that I do like is the ability of the young men to be able to transfer. But again, it feeds into that same concept of invincibility. It's like, well, shoot, if he doesn't want me, somebody else will. And they just take off and go somewhere else. But to sum it up, you know, I do feel as there is a feeling of entitlement, a feeling of invincibility. And then you have that kind of a wild card. And I know it's kind of funny to some, but some guys are just knuckleheads, and they are prone to get into trouble. And if you don't keep a firm hand on them, they will get into trouble. Now, I don't know anything about this young man from Auburn, to be perfectly honest, but, you know, sounds a little bit like a knucklehead. I don't know why you're on a college campus and you feel like you need to get away from the police. When, you know, stop whatever it was you did wrong or the police thought you did wrong, let them know who you are. Say, hey, let me call coach or call whoever I need to call, and we'll get it straightened out. But, you know, I could go on and on, but I know that is not the case, not the point here.
Okay.
Hey, Doctor,
Francis, go ahead, Tim. What were you going to say?
Steve brings up a good point, and while he was talking, one of the things that came to my mind when he talked about discipline is that many of the things that coaches did to keep us in line back in the day, they would call abuse now. So these kids don't have, you know, and I don't mean to make light of it, but that's true. These kids don't have that fear of retribution that we had when we were coming up as well.
Yeah.
And without a doubt. We're going to touch a little bit more on it. Precious, what are your thoughts about it? You hear what Tim and Steve said about the knuckleheads. What's your thoughts?
You know, I agree with them. And I just want to go back and say, Duck, I thought Richard Williams was flaky too, and sometimes an embarrassment, but he knew what he was doing. I just had to go back and say that.
I'll second that.
For sure. But this young man was eluding the police on a motorcycle, and they actually stopped pursuing him twice because they found that he was going to endanger himself or someone else. So they stopped eluding him twice, but they eventually arrested him, released him within the same day, and he is on campus and practicing. But to say why they do it, I agree with Steve. Some are just knuckleheads, but I think it's too this era and the era of notoriety, the era of exposure, and the fact that you can go in the moment and go live and reach millions in seconds. And the fact that they are so popular now because everybody knows who they are, because it's not like, you know, we're waiting to see what the stats were in the newspaper the next day. Thing is so instant. And I think the notoriety and the feeling that they have is instant, and they feel that maybe they're above some of this. But sometimes kids just make poor decisions. But I think it's the sign of the times that we're in, that we're seeing some of this.
Okay. I want to stay right there with you, Princess, because, like, Tim and Steve brought up some interesting points. And Tim and Steve, you guys could jump in at any time, and even, you know, especially you, Tim, if you got questions that you want to follow up on something. But, Princess, I want to say, do you think, too, the coaches are afraid of losing their job if they let some of these, quote-unquote, 4 or 5-star guys go? Because now, you know, you're letting your best player go, even though he's doing things wrong on campus or even in the community.
Duck, I completely agree. The decision that these coaches are making, especially in the Power Five conferences, are impact everybody. And to have someone on your team that maybe isn't on the straight and narrow, you're concerned because we're not keeping coaches around for a 4-year stint, or at least to see his recruiting class from freshmen get to juniors or seniors. They're being let go after a year or maybe two. So the pressure is on. And the amount of money being made in college football now, I think, adds to the pressure to make sure that you're winning. And I agree with that, you know. We're trying to hold on to as many as you can. And I think that's what college coaches are doing, especially those that are in these cities, you know, high-impact cities, high-volume conferences, and you get to see them every day. They're doing press conferences every day. They're doing meetings every day. And then at a certain point in time that they're going out and visiting the fans and alumni. So it's a high-pressure job, I think, these days, and we do hold on. They probably do because of that.
Okay.
They're trying to win.
Tim, it comes to you with it because – the way most of these athletes are acting in college, they try to carry some of this over into the NFL. Some get away with it, some don't. So kind of put this thing into focus for us. What's your thoughts on, you know, getting in trouble in college, taking it to the NFL, and is there any way they should handle it? You know, we know what the commissioner would do, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, Dave, you played pro football. I didn't. I just played at the college level. But the interesting thing was when I went to college, you know, I walked on campus, you know, I was Mr. All Virginia, you know, outside linebacker, star, and all this kind of stuff. And I quickly realized that everybody on campus was All-State. Everybody on the team was All-State in whatever state they came from. So I had to earn my way. And I think what happens is a lot of times the big-time colleges treat these players with such a level of stardom in their communities, and now, too, with the NILs and things like that, that they feel special in a way that very few of us ever have coming into the pro ranks. And if they were, as Steve called them, a knucklehead in college, and it probably started even before that. It probably just manifested itself in college. They're going to continue to get away with, or think that they can get away with these things at the pro level. And what they need to understand is, we've talked about this several times on the program, a lot of the owners are not athletic people. These are business people who have millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, at stake, and they will get rid of you in a heartbeat, you know, at the pro level. And discipline you in ways that maybe you've never been disciplined before. And I think that they just have gotten used to getting away with stuff. Somebody may have mentioned that earlier. You know, those habits are just, they die real hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Steve, I want to come to you. You know, you going to Kentucky State, you know, myself going to West Virginia, you know, Tim going out to Ohio and playing. A lot of guys from the city, and when I say talk about city, being a country boy, city, you know, your DMV, your New York, your LA, places like that, they had the tendency to think that it was so country that they could do almost anything and get away with it, as we call them, city slick. I don't know if you experienced that at Kentucky State or not.
Let me roll back real quick and say, number one, Richard Williams was a little cray-cray. Everybody's right, okay? He was very, very effective, and Tim used the term, he was crazy like a fox, and he was. But he was a little cray-cray, okay? The second thing is, the young man from Auburn, when you guys are talking sometimes, I'm on the internet looking at stuff. He was the first player to sign an NIL deal with Amazon.com. So I don't know, maybe he lost his mind during that time frame. the third thing is, Kim hit upon it, is he said that they kind of become they become celebrities to a degree. You have these social media accounts where they try to get so many followers, and they're constantly checking to see who likes this and who likes that, like everybody else does, too. I mean, a lot of other people, too. It is not unique to the star athlete, but there is a certain degree of celebrity that goes along with a highly touted recruit or a highly touted athlete. And there is not a lot of fear of repercussion. And I thought about Alabama when Tim was talking, and that Nick Saban runs a pretty tight ship. And the reason he does, I think, is because he has such a deep team almost every year. And you can afford to sit a four- or five-star guy when you got another one who is ready to play.
Right.
Maybe that one is a junior and one's a sophomore. Or one's a sophomore and one's a freshman. But he's like, hey, look, if you don't straighten up, your butt's coming over here and sit down. And so he has control there. And the last point that you mentioned, I did not experience the lengthy careers that you guys had. But I remember when I went to Kentucky State, and I was out in my freshman year, I was backing up a guy that was a senior. His name happened to be Michael Jackson. Not the same guy, of course, but his name was Michael Jackson, and he was from D.C. And when I tell you this brother ran the football team, he ran the football team. Mike pretty much did what Mike wanted to do, okay? Now, he was very talented. Mike was about 6'3", 6'4", and moved like a cat. But the brother was good. He was, man. I used to just sit and watch and try to pick up little things from him. But he was an urban guy. He had a very urban style in a very country town, because Kentucky State is in Frankfort, Kentucky. So not a large or metropolitan area by any stretch of the imagination. But Mike was MJ before MJ was in. Well, I take that back. MJ was already out. But his initials, everybody called him MJ. But the brother ran things, man. He did. And there was a certain celebrity about Mike. Kentucky State was a very small campus, but everybody knew Mike. And he kind of did what Mike wanted to do. I don't know how the heck he stayed eligible, because when I was going to class, Mike was in the union. In Spain.
Duck, you know, I wanted to kind of chime in. I remember being at practices for the University of Florida, especially during the Percy Harvin in TiVo years. And I remember Urban Meyer cursing at TiVo and then cursing at Percy Harvin. Percy turned around and cursed back at Urban Meyer and said, "Come on, TiVo, they need us." And there was some colorful language in between that. "Let's just walk off the field. They'll come and get us when they need us, and they can't play this game without us." And that was 2006, 2007, and Percy Harvin was a problem anyway. And that was the same team with Aaron Hernandez and the Pouncey twins. And Aaron Hernandez was known as Chico. And he was the mob guy on campus, and his enforcers were the Pouncey twins. Hmm. And they shot someone on Main Street with the BB gun, so they shot someone. And they were able to keep it out of the news and get them back to campus. But they just didn't start being knuckleheads. And I think the notoriety has increased in the availability of notoriety in the avenues and technology to do so has made them, you know, I think the exposure has made them a little bit arrogant. And, Duck, I'm sure if you'd had a camera phone and Twitter back in the day, you would have taken a picture of that afro in the mirror and posted it everywhere, right?
Hey, Princess, all I'm happy is that we didn't have that back then, and we don't need to talk about that because that's you know.
Hey, Duck, no hypothetical situation.
Right.
Hey, Duck. You know, didn't Lawrence Phillips didn't he throw a woman over a balcony when he was at Nebraska? You know, this kind of thing is not necessarily brand new as Princess was pointing out. It, you know, this kind of thing has happened. And Percy Harvin, by the way, was from Cincinnati, which is a relatively decent sized city. But you had Lawrence Phillips, who was a troublemaker in Nebraska. I grew up, but I lived for about 12 years in Columbus, which is a good-sized city of over 1.5 million people. And their Ohio State is the king. I mean, their ball players are just major celebrities. They're as big in Columbus as any pro ball player was in Cleveland when I lived there. And the thing about that is that, you know, you get these ball players who are used to getting away with stuff, being protected, as you pointed out. And, you know, they just kind of have a feeling of entitlement and that whatever they do, it's going to be covered up and made okay by the powers that be because they have talent.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Columbus,
it's just harder now.
Yeah, and Columbus is a city, you know, as I said, 1.5 million people, but they don't have a pro team. You know, they've got a pro hockey team. And so they are it. They are the professional team in that area, and that happens at a lot of college campuses around the country. You go to Knoxville, University of Tennessee players are bigger than life.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And in defense of my boy, Lawrence Phillips, I got to throw this in. Lawrence had some problems. God bless his soul. He had some mental problems. So, but
didn't he commit suicide in jail?
Well, I think he did.
Really,
I think he hung himself. HBO special on it.
Yeah.
And the key, though, is that, that is the way things have been reported officially, but a lot of people say they don't think he hung himself. It's been a real good HBO special. I don't know if it was on HBO or if it was on ESPN, but it's still a lot of questions around his death. But, yes, the official cause of death was death by suicide, by hanging himself.
Yeah.
But I have a tendency to believe that that's not what happened.
Yeah, and there's a possibility that's not what happened, because didn't he kill someone while he was in there?
Yes.
He did. He did. But it was just self-defense, too. But he did. Yes, he did. And he did beat up his girlfriend on numerous occasions.
Yes.
He had a really, really bad violent streak, but he did have some issues from an emotional / mental type of perspective. So, but... you know, it was not a good situation. Yeah. I can give him a medical clearance for his problems. Some guys, like you said, Princess, they just make poor decisions. And a lot of times the coach is there to cover it up and sweep it under the rug. And what I was saying is, it's just harder now to do that with social media, with cameras everywhere, with people who will sell a story to get paid for that story. It's just hard for coaches to sweep things under the rug, but I agree that it has been occurring for a long time. It's just that before it was easier to hide it and keep that keep it out of the news, out of the press, and off of TV.
Okay, I'm going to stay right with you, Steve, because let's talk about Deshaun Watson and performance and – your thoughts, because you're probably the only one we haven't heard how you feel about the whole situation.
Well, let me start from the beginning. When I first heard about it, I was one of the most disappointed people that you could run across, because this guy had a squeaky clean reputation through college, from high school through college and on into his early years in the pros. And when I found out about it, I was like, oh, man, oh, my goodness, not really. But so my first thought response was I was just very disappointed in him. And then as the list of women began to grow and grow and grow, I was like, okay, well, there is smoke, there is typically fire. And, I mean, I don't really know even how to describe it. I read some of the information from the trial. And the one of the reports said he would go to these massage people and women, and he would have them sign an NDA, a non-disclosure agreement. And he would bring his own towel, which was about the size, they said, of a face cloth. All right. So I'm like, what is going on here? Because typically they use a sheet when they give you a massage, or at least a towel the size of like a beach towel.
This a beach towel.
A face cloth. It's a massage session. So I'm like, Deshaun, what in the world are you doing? But the another part that mystifies me is, If the brother walked in with a face towel, you know, not the little bitty washcloth, but the next size up, right? That's like 12 by 18 inches. Still, it seemed like, hey, that is not regulation, and I cannot use that. And if you insist, I will leave. It doesn't have to go any further than that. But I'm not trying to take the fault off of him, because I'm like, again, what are you doing? Why would you do that? But, you know, and to bring an NDA with you, a non-disclosure agreement? And for what purpose does that serve? What purpose does that serve, Mr. Watson? Why do I have to sign an NDA if I don't give you a massage? And I'm a licensed masseuse in many cases. Many of them were licensed. But he would find people and look them up and make appointments and bring his towel with him. Now, moving on to the penalty. You know, I read first, it was a masterful job again, and this is all Steve's opinion, right? But it was a masterful job by the NFL. They got a retired judge who had a great reputation. I don't think it was a sister. But she said she went totally by the evidence at hand. There was no violence. And those were some of the reasons that she gave him the six-week suspension as opposed to what I thought that it would be maybe like 12 weeks. And there was some talk of an entire season. Or maybe one of those punishments where it's like, you know, this is indefinite. You know, when a year is over, you call us and we'll let you know what the status is. But he had already been out a year. And before he spent that year on, you know, out of football, I thought he was one of the top two or three quarterbacks in football. You know, got to see him a lot down here, you know, when he was with the Texans in Houston. And the young man was a phenomenal athlete on a team that was fairly subpar most of the time. He and the wide receiver that got traded to the Arizona Cardinals were basically the heart and soul of that team. And along with J.J. Watt. But like I said, I could talk about my man all day long, but just extremely disappointed. I'm glad that he has gotten back onto the field. Cleveland gave him a buttload of money, and I hope that he will stay out of trouble. The best thing that I can say is that it wasn't a violent type of offense. It was very seedy, if you will. But she said there was no violence involved, and he's being punished, and hopefully we can move on from there. And I'll do a mic drop there.
All right, Princess, you know you hear what Steve said, the 6 week suspension. What are you thinking?
Well, when the six games were announced by Judge Sue Robinson, I was surprised that it was just six games. But I was hoping that that was it. And in her findings, she said that she did find his actions to be egregious and predatory, but that she did not find anything beyond anything criminal, and just like the grand jury didn't either. Where I now am at is my disdain for the NFL and putting her in this position to handle these cases, but now also saying we leave the ability to appeal if we do not like that decision, and they have. And Roger Goodell said at the end of last week he feels a 12-game or an entire season suspension is more appropriate than six games. And now he's left that up to the state attorney or former state attorney, attorney from the state of New Jersey to make the final decision. And you would have to think that that man that he's put to make that final decision will definitely make it with his advice and probably take on more of the tone of Roger Goodell. My concern also, Doug, as I said last week, is that they wanted it to be at least 12 weeks, and the NFL, they wanted a 12-game suspension because then that would get them past the Cleveland-Houston Texans game. They thought that that would be a PR nightmare for the NFL, for the Browns and the Texans to have Deshaun Watson come back to Houston and play and possibly win. So I'm just not pleased with the NFL, how they've appointed someone to handle it and then taking her decision and her power away and giving it to someone else. You've got to think that it's going to come pretty soon and he's going to be gone for the year.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Tim, what are your thoughts on that? And Steve, we're going to let you jump back in on it. Tim, Roger Goodell, is the pressure, where's the pressure coming from for him?
I think it's coming from women's groups. It's public pressure, and maybe I shouldn't say that. Not just women's groups. I think it's coming from the public, from the general public, I think he's responding to that, because if he's not going to do anything more with some of the other things that have happened previously in the NFL,
oh, yeah.
Ben Roethlisberger raped a young girl, and they didn't do much more than that to him. I think it's about public pressure. Getting on to, you asked the question about how his performance the other night, I thought he played fairly well. He had two drops that were good passes. That offensive line needs some work, and the Browns got some work to do this year. But I thought his performance after having not played for a year and a half wasn't too bad. I mean, it was a little rusty, but I'm just hoping, like Steve said, and Prince, as I've heard say in the past, I'm hoping they will resolve mm-hmm. this thing and put it behind them pretty soon, because the NFL is looking really ugly in this situation, just like Deshaun Watson's looking pretty bad too.
Yeah, and I don't know if you guys heard the language before I get back to Steve, the language that Jacksonville was chanting to him.
Yeah, I did see that, where they were what the fans were yelling at him, which
uh-huh.
was pretty deplorable, reprehensible. But let me say this: first off, Roger Goodell needs to shut the hell up. I said it already. I don't know if I can say that, but he does. The NFL needs to be quiet, because he came back and did all this apology stuff to Colin Kaepernick somewhere along the line he saw the light about what he was doing. He just needs to shut, the whole NFL needs to shut up. And I want to make this point, because I am one who is very concerned about CTE and head injuries. Riddle me this. How are you so concerned about head injuries, and they're wearing these big popcorn-looking helmets in practice and stuff, but you add another game to the season? How does that make sense? I don't get that part. And the other thing is, the NFL and Goodell said 12 games. There's more mess behind that, because I guarantee you this, the NFLPA, the NFL Players Association, is going to come back after that and say, hey, look, that's too long. You know, they're going to file a grievance is what's going to happen. And this will get drug out some more. I'm like, hey.
Yeah, but Steve, doesn't that hurt Deshaun more than anybody? By them keep dragging it out?
What? Oh, yeah.
If they keep
It hurts the NFL, too, because it continues to take up airtime and press time when we could be focused on football, and let him do what he's going to do. I'm happy. I'm happy for him to be in Cleveland. I hope the Browns can do well with him there. Like I said, I have always been a big fan of his, and no one was more disappointed when I read the news than me, that he was into doing what he was doing. And it is. I use the word seedy, and it is. It was very, very seedy. But, you know, he got caught is what happened. And unfortunately, that is the telltale sign so many times. They get busted. They get caught. And that doesn't make it right. I would never, never, ever say, you know, it was okay. But they hired a judge. She made a ruling, and now we want to go behind her and say, oh, no. The NFL is a master of marketing, advertising, and being hypocrites. And I love football. I do. But they are big hypocrites, because it is a business, let me tell you. And the other thing that I think, Prince said, you know, 12 weeks. They need butts in those seats in Cleveland. And the longer he is off the field, there is an economic impact. You know, I'm not saying that they won't survive without him playing, because they will. Football will survive. The Browns will survive. But they need him on the field, the Browns do. And they have given that dude, like, what, $45, $50 million a year? I don't know how much it was. But it was a lot. And you can be guaranteed they're going to, like, hey, you know, maybe we can find some middle ground. Maybe we'll do 8 weeks. But, you know, I just would like to see it come to an end and move on.
Yeah,
Doc,
you know,
I do want to say this. No, go ahead, Doc.
No, my only thing, mine's going to be quick, Princess. The thing is, nobody's on here is condoning what Deshaun Watson did. But my question still remains, if you come in there with a face tile, they had the right to say, like Steve said, they had the right to say no.
Yes, sir.
Well, out of the 24 of them, 21 did. And in his urgence to do more, 21 did. The other three acclimated to everything. So you're correct. Those 24, and we're not talking about all 66, but 24 of them who filed this said they all were encouraged or coerced by him. But they all did show up and with that small towel or whatever and do whatever. But I agree with you. At that point, you got to say, like my auntie would do, oh, no, and just turn around and walk away. But they didn't. And I think maybe because they knew who he was, or maybe because they were in the facility of the Houston Texans. I don't know, but they felt compelled to carry out. But 21 of them did not, once he got to a point where he was asking for more, they walked out or said no and moved on. So, but I wanted to go back to something Tim said, and that is that he said women's group, and he said, well, maybe not. But, Tim, I do agree. I do think that the Me Too movement and the women's group have really taken hold and have a footprint in America now. And I think the wives of the GMs and the wives of different football players and owners, I think that pressure has mounted. And obviously it didn't mount with the owner in the GM of the Browns. He got $230 million guaranteed. But I do think there is that pressure that we don't hear about, just like I thought there was pressure over Mike Vick. I think the women behind the scene encouraged everyone to stay away from, you know, someone that would hurt Fifi. And I think there is that pressure with women right now, too.
Right. Yeah.
But see, that's why I say it was a masterful move by the NFL. They got a female judge, one who is very well educated. But it backfired on them. They knew what they were doing right up front.
They undercut her authority, though. That's what gets me.
Exactly. They gave her the ultimate authority, and then they undercut it. You're correct, Tim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This woman
they put a female in charge.
Yeah. Take her off the knees.
Duck, could I mention something?
Definitely.
I saw an article in the news that Aqib Talib's brother, who's a little league coach, a youth league coach in Lancaster, Texas, which I think is outside of Dallas.
Yes.
Killed another coach, a youth league coach, and just turned himself in. And this was something I'm assuming from the way that I was able to read the article, this is something that happened in connection with a game or a practice where kids were out there. These parents and coaches of youth leagues are really out of control. And I think this is like a major tragedy that really needs to be amplified. When a coach of a youth league team is killing another coach over a youth league football game, I'd just like to hear what other people think about that. And I know Steve's down there in Dallas and probably knows a little bit more about it than what I do.
Yeah, and they got into a squabble, you know, after a youth league football game. He got physical. Then, I don't know, he pulled a gun and shot the guy multiple times. I think he lost
in front of his 9-year-old son.
Yeah.
And white.
I guess pretty much everybody was still around.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's really the only way you can describe it. Hopefully, we can say it's an anomaly, that there was death involved. But I think more to the point of what Tim is making is that what kind of example are we setting for the youth when the coaches in general, not shouldn't say in general, but many coaches become so involved in the game that they are willing to forget about sportsmanship, which should always be the number one lesson that we're teaching, you know, along with trying to teach skills to the kids and competition. It's really about learning how to be a good sport, about whether you win or lose. And he obviously went way, way over the edge because we read about fights all the time and really, really
right.
heated arguments between coaches. But, yeah, this one went way over the line when he pulled out a gun and shot the guy.
You got to remember too. 9U, a kid that's 9 years old, who has not fully developed yet, who's probably going to either get better or probably end up not ever playing again. So you
right.
gonna lose your mind over living through your son or somebody else's kid to get that angry over a 9U football game. Come on now. 9U.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
To all the ladies out there
who
are listening, that's nine and old and under. 9 and under.
Yeah. I mean, what is this world coming to? I mean, that's got to be one of the crazy. It's got to be some type of rules and regulations. Even when I was coaching high school ball, you know, the first thing I wanted to do was talk to the boosters and the parents because,
mm-hmm.
you know, everybody's kid is not going to play. You can only put 11 out there.
Right.
So, my thing is, and the parents fighting each other, I mean, you know, you got the Pop Warner fans, you know, they're fighting. The kids aren't on the field playing. The parents are fighting.
Yeah. There's a lot
of like,
that.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah.
To quote my mother, she has been to several games with me, and she would say, I wish this passion and all this back and forth and competitiveness would reach my classroom. You know, if you're upset.
I knew you were going there.
Yeah,
would reach my classroom.
Hey, Chris, ain't nobody going to get the fighting over a spelling bee.
But you're right, though. You're right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Take us home, Chris.
Yeah.
We got to do that show. We got to do.
Yeah. Steve Thornton, thank you. I appreciate that. I'll be reaching out to you this season. How about them Cowboys? Tim Moore, thank you for the theory proven at the beginning of the show, and thank you for your contribution for sure. Duck, we'll see you in the next one.
All right.
All right, never had so good. We'll be back here at the top of the hour in about 90 seconds for the professional contributors. We'll see you then.
Peace.
You're inside Never Had It So Good Sports Radio. Join us live weekdays at 7 p.m. and on site at Hills Barbershop on Fridays at 5 p.m. We make it easy to talk sports.